shore.
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
It's about 9 o'clock now, central time, which means that if we set them up and turn them on right now, they'd run until about noon tomorrow.
Does thunderstorm activity appear to consolidate around that eye?
That is storm surge from the Atlantic Ocean, the overwash coming in.
You're listening to Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the weekly podcast series that takes an in-depth look back at over two decades of tracking hurricanes, technology, behind-the-scenes stories, and much more. I'm your host, Mark Suddeth. So glad you could join me, and thank you for supporting this exclusive podcast via Patreon. Hello again, and welcome to another edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. So glad you could tune in once again as we continue to take a look back at the historic saga of Hurricane Katrina. We are now up to day three of that saga and my interaction with Katrina. It is now Friday, August the 26th, 2005, that we are talking about, and it is 16 years ago. I got it wrong in the last podcast episode. I was off a year, but as I said, what's a year among friends, right? Coming up on 16 years since Katrina, this coming August of 2021, this podcast episode being uploaded on the 24th of February, 2021. So yes, we're talking about 16 years ago now, and how much things have changed since then. But I'm telling you, that event really left an indelible mark on me, on our country, on hurricane history, on people in Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama as well, even South Florida. And that's where we are. We're in South Florida still, dealing with the first landfall of Katrina. It moved across the southern peninsula there during the day Thursday. Mike Watkins and I covering that with the Chevy Tahoe and its instrumentation, the anemometer, the pressure sensor, and the remote cams. We put two out of the three remote cams that we had, set them up for Katrina. We had the Tahoe cam going, as I mentioned. Very successful first run of everything. We were exhausted, so Mike went on back to his place in Coconut Creek. I went across I-75 Alligator Alley over to Naples, where I would spend the night, Thursday night, at my good friend Dan Summers' house. He is the Director of Emergency Services and Emergency Management for Collier County in Naples. I have known Dan for a long time, all the way back to my college days, and he had been a great friend and mentor, and he happened to live in Naples, where it looked like Katrina was going to go right over them, but alas, it was not meant to be, which turned out good for me and for them. Katrina went south of the forecast track during the day Thursday through Thursday night into Friday, and it went on down towards the Everglades into Monroe County and finally out into the extreme southeast Gulf of Mexico in the very warm waters north of the Dry Tortugas, the Florida Keys and vicinity, and there it would begin to strengthen dramatically. But I was going to have all day Friday, after hopefully getting a good night's sleep Thursday night, the 25th, that I would spend Friday getting ready. I had to prep the equipment and just mentally prepare for what would be coming next. Well, here we are. It is Friday, the 26th of August. I am in Naples, after getting hopefully a good night's sleep Thursday night. Don't know how much sleep I got that night, to be honest with you. My nerves were kind of shot. It was very exhilarating. Got to Dan Summers' house fairly late. He was very accommodating. I moved some of my equipment into his garage. I had a spare bedroom that I could use. Again, he was very hospitable. And whatever I needed, he was there to help me out. He was spared, being the Director of Emergency Management and Emergency Services for Collier. Katrina spared the area, so Dan was spared. a lot of grief and angst, as it were, that he didn't have to deal with Katrina much more than they did. But they were on high alert. Schools were canceled, all kinds of government facilities closed, so forth and so on, because it looked like early in the forecast cycle for Katrina that it was going to go across basically Interstate 75 over to Naples, and it did not. It veered south of the forecast track into the extreme southeast Gulf of Mexico, as I mentioned. And so let's just jump ahead around 11 a.m. now on Friday the 26th, and I get up, I take a look at things. I remember I had my laptop set up in Dan's dining room on his nice dining room table. I can still visualize that even today. I had the Sprint air card plugged in. You know, I'd go in and check on things. I had so many emails, as you could imagine. You know, several new subscribers to this Hurricane LiveNet project. And I had to answer those emails and get everybody plugged in. And just there was a lot of maintenance to do, you know, updating the website and trying to figure out what I'm going to say on hurricanetrack.com. The site is getting a lot of hits at this point in time. You know, Katrina is developing into this pretty major news story. Little did we know where it was going to go from here, of course. But, you know, the pressure was really starting to mount. And for me, this was going to be the single biggest high-pressure event that I would ever deal with. And the irony is, of course, high-pressure event going into an extremely low-pressure environment with a hurricane. Ha-ha. But really, it was high stress. I think that's the best way to put it. And I was starting to see that mounting. You know, lots of emails, as I mentioned, different people in the media. Lowe's was trying to communicate with me. They wanted to know what was going on. Sprint as well. It was all good, very positive, but I'm only one person. There's only so much I can do. I remember communicating with Paul Bowman out in Nevada. Everything had worked really well with the live streaming video stuff. Jim Williams was in touch with me, and he was able to rebroadcast some of what we were doing in the Deerfield Beach area over on HurricaneCity.com. There was just a lot going on, as you can imagine. So at 11 a.m., the advisory package for Katrina states that it was 100 miles per hour. So it's a Category 2. And it's really, really interesting that, you know, and you can go back and look at this in the archives at hurricanes.gov or nhc.noaa.gov. And you look at Tropical Cyclone Archives or whatever it is, and you can find the advisories in the Graphics Archive. You can read the actual cyclone advisories, the discussions. You can look at the graphics. They're all there. And it's hard to believe, you know, how far we've come in 16 years, almost 16 years now. But back then, you know, here it is, Friday morning, just before lunch, and the official landfall point on Monday is around Panama City, maybe just a little bit west of there. It's the Florida Panhandle, almost the central Florida Panhandle. That was the forecast landfall 48 hours later. So this is Friday morning, and by Monday morning, it was forecast to come in to the west of Mexico Beach, the Panama City area. You get the idea, and we all know where it ended up. It came in across the extreme southeast tip of Louisiana, moved in just to the east of New Orleans, right along that 89 and a half degrees longitude line. You know, so this was not a good forecast just 2 days out. If you think about it, New Orleans was barely even in the cone of uncertainty at this point in time. And so please keep that in mind. And these graphics are there. You can go see them yourselves. It's you know, it's true. There was a lot that would get focused in the next day, yes, but these people in New Orleans especially needed 72 to 96 hours to adequately evacuate. We are now less than 48 hours until landfall. So just keep that in mind. Same for Mississippi. It's the weekend. It's now Friday. It's payday. It's the last Friday of the month of August. And there's a lot going on here that people just didn't realize and weren't thinking about. You know, people are going to be out and about, especially along the Mississippi coast. Big gaming community there. The industry was strong. And, you know, the same thing in New Orleans. People are going to be down there in the weekend. in the Big Easy. And wow, you know, this was just setting up to be a horrible situation. So there's little old me and my little old website and whatever, right? Doing what we do. I'm in communication with Jesse, talking with Mike, you know, via text message. He had to get some sleep as well. He got a few hours head start on me. It wasn't that far from Coconut Creek, Miami area, Fort Lauderdale, whatever, over to Naples. And it was a little bit of inclement weather that night, Thursday night into Friday. But anyhow, I'm all set. I'm ready to go. Got a, you know, like I said, a good night's sleep, I think. I do remember that I didn't feel horrible, you know, when you only get a couple hours of sleep and you're just, you're not yourself. You start developing that zombie-ism that we've all experienced. It's horrible. Not there yet, which is good. I got a shower. And I know these details is, again, how do you remember these things? I got a shower and was, you know, because I'll tell you why. Because I can remember how accommodating Dan and his wife were. Whatever you need, you got. Don't hesitate to ask. This bedroom is yours. The shower's yours. You're all set. Think of it as a hotel. You know, you're good to go. And so I didn't have to worry about that. I didn't feel uncomfortable. I had known Dan a long time. He's not just a friend. He's like a colleague as well. And, you know, the friendship and the professional relationship that we had were intersecting. So, you know, I got a shower, kind of washed off the day, as they say, and that's important. You freshen up and, you know, you're reinvigorated and ready to take on the new day. And so that's what I did. I worked on some things on maintenance on the website. Like I said, communicating with a few people, lots of phone calls, a few text messages. Now we text more than we do phone calls. Isn't that weird? Many years later. But back then it was more phone calls than text. And I figured, okay, I got to get out. I got to do some things around town in the Naples area. And I went over to Boston Market. They did. They have a, maybe it's still there. I don't know. But I looked it up, went to Boston Market. I love the Boston Market. So I went there, got some lunch. I remember how friggin' hot and humid it was. We're now on the eastern side, the northeast side of the outer periphery of Katrina, where the subsidence is. So the air is rising in the hurricane and then sinking on the periphery. And that's where I was. Naples is now on the periphery. So it was just freaking hot, crushing humidity. You know, late August in Southwest Florida. Are you kidding? Absolutely it was. So got some lunch and, you know, probably went over to Lowe's or something and got a few things. I think I got a couple of gas cans, if I remember correctly. I think that was very important. I filled up the Tahoe over at Sam's Club. I was a Sam's Club member at the time. I do remember that. And just, you know, the Tahoe with all of its weather gear on it and the logos and everything, you know, got a lot of attention. So people would stop and ask about Katrina and just, hey, man, you tracking that hurricane or whatever. It was just busy, busy, busy. And all along, I'm trying to figure out, what is the next play here? What are we going to do next? And, you know, obviously, I'm going to go over to the Gulf Coast. But where? Is it going to be the Florida Panhandle? Is it going to be more to the west? You know, we didn't know for sure. And remember, in our case, us hurricane interceptors, or chasers, whatever word you prefer, we do follow the skinny black line. We need to be, especially back then, when the vehicle was more important than it is now in terms of a data collection part of the puzzle, now the vehicle is more to deliver the equipment. It's totally different in some respects. But we need to be where the skinny black line is, the center of the cone of uncertainty. That's where we have to be. That's where we need to set up the equipment, these three unmanned cams, the weather stations that go with them, and then figure out where we're going to be to ride this thing out safely. And yes, we were thinking Florida Panhandle, and then it looked like Katrina was going to go up into the southeast United States from there. So I get my chores done for the day and got my lunch and whatnot, and then I went over to the Collier County Emergency Operations Center to meet up with Dan, visit some of the people that worked there with him. And I was able to film some stuff inside the EOC. He gave me permission to do so. kind of documenting this behind-the-scenes stuff. And that was really, really fascinating. You know, Collier County, very wealthy area of the country. Naples certainly is. And it's a beautiful area, too, that is for sure. And at this particular point in time, the EOC was located in the government building. They have a whole different EOC now. It's like an incredible, it's like a mini NORAD. I've been there a few times. It's unbelievable. But even back in 05, the original one over in the old government building there in Naples was not bad. That's for sure. It was something else. So I went in there, got inside, got checked in, and filmed a few things, talked with a few people. And it was neat because I was able to sit in on the conference call that they do with the State Office of Emergency Management. And I was able to film that. And, well, here's what that sounded like.
Miami weather at this point. Go ahead, Miami weather.
Miami weather. We have dropped all of the land-based tropical cyclone warnings at 5 p.m. We still have an actual hurricane warning in the outer coastal waters, 20 to 60 miles off the coast from nothing over land. We have a flood watch still for Miami-Dade County, Collier, and Maine and Monroe counties until 8 p.m. tonight.
Current forecast track. If hurricane force winds will reach Escambia County, but you know, that's still plenty uncertainty there. We begin to see high surf and coastal flood problems probably on Sunday along the coast there as the strong Category 3 hurricane is probably only 150 miles south of the area, and we are on the dirty side of it. So
we're in pretty good shape for mutual aid as needed. Just give us a call.
Okay, thank you, Collier. Any other Area 6 counties with updates?
So yeah, that was really, really neat to be able to hang out with Dan at the EOC, film things, kind of see what the behind-the-scenes process was for dealing with a hurricane, even though they didn't have much impact in the Naples Collier County area. Thank goodness for them. They would get theirs a couple months later when Wilma came calling. We'll get to that in a few weeks. But as far as Katrina went, Naples went mostly unscathed. So I was able to, in a generally low stress environment, document how things went and, you know, get the behind the scenes tour, meet some of the staff there, which would actually come in very handy, as we'll see later, when we get to Wilma, still many, many weeks away in real time in the world of 05 and in our podcast series. We still have some time to go before Wilma. But this really was laying the groundwork for that. So I wrapped everything up at the EOC. Dan still had a lot of work to do, of course, at the EOC. And so I left, and I had finished all my chores and whatnot for the day related to the Tahoe, getting gas cans, maybe some supplies, whatever I had to do. It was done. So I went back to his house in their neighborhood there in Naples, the Summers house. And I basically took over the garage, and I had to do something that was extremely important, and that was to inventory, go through and clean and prepare all three of these remote camera slash weather station units so that once we got to wherever we were going to go along the Gulf Coast, all we had to do was set them up. And that was kind of difficult. Even, you know, thinking back almost 16 years ago, that was a process just to get everything running. It wasn't as easy as it is now by far. But I wanted it to be at least as easy as possible so that once again, I would have everything ready to go, streamlined as best as I could, so that if it was going to be Jesse and I that were going to do this, if it was going to be Mike and I, you know, who is it? Who's going to do this with me? I didn't know yet. So whoever it was going to be, we needed to be as seamless and as stress-free as possible. So what I did, I took each unit out of the Tahoe. I cleaned the Tahoe very well. Got everything reorganized, any leaves that had blown in, sand or whatever, cleaned it up real well. And then I took each unit of these cases, these black storm cases, these Pelican cases. Storm Case was the brand name, you know, like the Nike Air. I've talked about this before. This was called Storm Case from Pelican. Well, actually, it was Hartig Corporation. I keep mentioning that every once in a while in this podcast series, but they're owned by Pelican now. Anyhow, I took the cases and I took them apart. I took the batteries out, the inverters out, all the wires, and I set everything up because they were all identical. And I set them up in Dan's garage. He had a nice big two-car garage, and he just let me take it over. So on the floor of this garage was all of this equipment. So in sort of one-third of the garage would be the first case, the battery, the laptop, the camera system, the weather station stuff, the inverter, the Dazzle, the connectors, the RCA cables, the BNC cable, whatever. It was all there. I dried it out if it needed drying out. I inventoried everything, making sure everything's there that needed to be there. Are all the tapes and all the VCRs, are they there? Is everything plugged in the way it should be? You know, just take my time. I was going to take like 6 to 8 hours in late into the night, Friday night, if I needed to do this. And this was incredibly important to me because I had to get this right, because I had a feeling that Katrina was going to be a much bigger deal than people were giving it credit for. We were already seeing some changes. So let's just jump ahead. Now let's look at 5 p.m., the advisory package from the National Hurricane Center that day, Friday the 26th. Winds are still 100 miles per hour, but the forecast track has changed fairly significantly. And now the landfall point is close to the Alabama-Mississippi border. It has shifted completely out of Florida for the eye to go over the center. It would put Florida, of course, in that right front quadrant with onshore flow. You know, so yes, there's still going to be impacts. Plus, it looked like Katrina was going to be fairly large. But this was a key thing. It had been shifting, and it looked like it was going to shift in the guidance. And a big reason behind this is because Katrina continued to move south of the forecast track, deeper out into the eastern Gulf of Mexico. And this put it farther away from the official track earlier and more out over the open Gulf, changing that angle so that once it made the turn, it was already farther west. You know, it just makes sense. That broader turn was going to happen. It wouldn't be as sharp a turn, so it's not going to go up into the panhandle. That's what it looked like. So that was really starting to manifest itself by the 5 p.m. advisory. So there I was in Dan's garage, meticulously going over all of the details of everything. I remember Windexing these bullet cameras. They have like a plastic, acrylic kind of, I mean, it might have even been glass. I don't remember, but the lens on these cameras, I Windexed them, and then I would put Rain-X on them. I do remember doing that. I Rain-X'd the Tahoe's windshield, you know, just all this maintenance stuff because I had time. I was able to do all this and not be burdened with anything else. Just focus on the equipment. So that's exactly what I did. It got fairly late into the night. Dan came home from work finally. I remember him coming out, offering to help me, kind of talking about things that it really is looking more grave for the Central Gulf Coast. You know, and you know, he was telling me, almost like a father figure, you know, be really careful when you get out there. You know, do get some sleep at some point. You know, do you have everything you need? You know, he was just awesome. And so there I was working on things, assembled all the equipment back, plugged everything back in, got all the stuff ready to go, reassembled, put each case back inside the Tahoe. Everything was ready to go. You know, like, all right, this is it. We can go right now, and we're ready to go for this hurricane. Whatever it ends up doing, we are ready for it. I wanted all of that behind me so that I could just spend a little bit of time Saturday morning figuring out, what are we going to do? Who am I going to do it with? Is it going to be Watkins? That was a possibility. Or will it be Jesse? Jesse wanted to come down, but he couldn't, looking like he wasn't going to be able to get off of work going into the next week. You know, he could drive down Saturday, Sunday, the 28th, 27th, 28th, whatever. Saturday was the 27th coming up into the 28th on Sunday. But what is he going to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or whatever, right? I mean, if this is a huge hurricane, Jesse would have to take a lot of time off of work. Same for Mike, honestly. But I think it was a little bit harder for Jesse. He wasn't sure. Mike was, you know, semi, yeah, I think I could swing this if you want me to go. I can meet up with you in Naples and we can go from there, whatever. So we all figured that out to some extent Friday night. I I went to bed pretty late, probably after midnight, and, you know, took a look at that 11 o'clock advisory on the 26th, and now the forecast is for Katrina to make landfall right in the middle of Mississippi, practically over Gulfport, and it's up to 105 miles per hour. It's still moving west-southwest at this point at about 8 miles per hour. And every one of those miles, this is one of the first times that I started understanding the concept that every mile counts, right? That every mile more south that it went, that it tracked, was a more broad curve back to the north later. And this was getting closer and closer to the dreaded scenario for New Orleans. Now, while New Orleans, of course, is a major concern, and for obvious reasons, a big population center, a cultural icon, one of the most dangerous places to be during a hurricane, we understood all that, the implications for Mississippi were starting to go up as well. And it's important to note, and you know, really pay attention to this, that as a general rule of thumb, the crew and I, which at this time was myself, obviously, Mike Watkins, Jesse Bass, that was pretty much it in 2005. They were the ones that would help me out. Maybe a couple other people would, yeah, I can help you if I get the time off. I mean, there's people always volunteering, but that's a whole other story right there. How do I figure out who's going to work with me? And in 05, it was these two guys, Mike and Jesse. We got along great together. We worked well together, so forth and so on. But we had a very solid understanding, a rule, really. No going to New Orleans in a major hurricane, period. Not going to do it. Not going to be there during a major hurricane. It was off limits because it was just too dangerous. We knew this. We had been to enough conferences, seen enough simulations, talked to enough people over the years. And I was frankly scared of it. Like, no way. People would say, hey man, would you ever go to New Orleans in like a major hurricane? And the answer was, nope, not even, wouldn't even consider it. Really, you'd miss out the core as much as you, forget it. It wasn't even like, I don't know, man. Trust me, this was a hard and fast rule. And it didn't matter. It's like, if it heads to New Orleans, we're not going there. We'll set up in Mississippi because they'll get plenty of action there. Trust me. You know, we knew that too. And we didn't have the amount of equipment that we do now. Now it's different, you know, because we have 20-something cameras we can put out. At this particular day and age, almost 16 years ago, we only had three. And very limited experience compared to what we have now, coming up on 16 years later. So very important to understand, New Orleans was never, ever, ever an option for us. Dan talked to me about it. Hey, would you go to New Orleans? And I remember this, again, back to that fatherly sort of embracing me as a, you know, like the son, his stepson, whatever you want to call it, right? His adopted son. Thank you. I had to think of it there. The guy inside my head to the rescue, you know, his adopted son. Hey, look, don't go to New Orleans. Oh, don't worry. Believe me. There was not even a question of it. Very, very important to understand that and to realize that no intentions whatsoever of going to New Orleans. So that being said, as we wrap up this episode, fairly short, because, you know, it's a lot going on this Friday, but not as intricate, not as detailed as what's getting ready to happen. These next few episodes, this is what the podcast is really all about, what you're getting ready to hear coming up in the next episode and then the several ones after that. Wow, truly, truly history-changing stuff getting ready to happen. But, you know, I go to bed and I'm thinking, all right, I'm ready. The Tahoe's packed. All of the equipment has been checked. Everything's ready to go. All the Sprint cards are working. The website's working fine. The sign-up process for PayPal and the Hurricane LiveNet thing, everything's working. I am comfortable. I'm good. I'm stress-free, relatively. You know, all I got to do is execute. That's it. I've got a good plan in place. I got a good crew. It's either going to be Jesse or Mike. We'll figure it out Saturday. Jesse was going to wait and let me know. And I believe at this point, Friday night, Mike said, if Jesse can't, I'll do it. I do seem to recall that conversation. Maybe Mike and I talked on the phone. It might have been text. I don't know. But he said, look, if Jesse can't, I'll do it because I don't want to leave you hanging. You got to have somebody to help you. I was like, oh, thank goodness. So I went to bed with that comfort and knowledge that when I got up on the 27th and, you know, said goodbye to Dan Summers, his wife and their kids, and hit the road again for the Gulf Coast, that I would be doing so with about as much confidence as one could possibly have in what was going to be an extraordinary project and an extraordinary use of technology, especially under these circumstances, as to what we now know happened. And that's where I will leave you, that this was it. This was the evening, the last evening of normalcy. It really was. Because Saturday the 27th, the you-know-what would hit the fan. I mean, it really would. People would start getting wind, literally, of what was going to happen. New Orleans became more of the focus. And the pucker factor, as they say, was really ramping up in a big way for the Central Gulf Coast, Mississippi, Alabama, but especially Southeast Louisiana, for New Orleans and vicinity. This was truly a monumental event that was about to unfold. And when I would wake up and hit the road, subsequently after getting ready and, you know, getting a good breakfast and getting out of there on Saturday the 27th, everything would change in such a profound way. And we will get into that. Mike Watkins will be my guest on the next episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway as we get into what we did on day 4, the big travel day. That long journey from Naples, Florida, over to Gulfport, Mississippi. That's where we would end up. Hey, look, as always, thank you for supporting this through Patreon. I hear from you either through email or you comment on Patreon, and I love it. I really do. This has been a really neat project. I appreciate your feedback. The overall production quality has gotten better. I like it. I find myself sometimes checking on the podcast to see how I like how it sounds, and it's getting there. It really is. So, you know, I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't think that you guys cared on your end, and it seems like you do. And that means a lot to me. It really, really does. It means a lot to Mike, to Jesse, and some of the other participants that have helped out to make this happen since I started this last year in 2020, right? We did this in the off season of 2020. So season 2 is going along really, really well. And I appreciate you being a part of it. Again, thanks for tuning in. I cannot wait to bring you what's next. It's going to truly be riveting. I am Mark Suddeth, HurricaneTrack.com. We'll talk again next week.